Workshop. We convene the workshop here at 5:30, and it is now 5:30.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we definitely have a quorum. I think we're safe to begin. What we're going to do is go back over the sign code, which we did before, and I'm just going to very quickly kind of go over all we covered, and then we'll keep making progress. So, as you recall, we kind of went through the section one, which is just kind of the intent of the sign code, which is basically to beautify the city and reduce clutter, get information out to people that need it. We started going through the definitions and looking at those, and those are all pretty straightforward. I'm just kind of scrolling very quickly. We got into the prohibited type of signs and, you know, light shielding and so forth. We got into, you know, the standard area of signs being about 32 square feet. I don't think we've had a problem with that being too little or too big. That just seems to be a standard throughout our code, and that's what I implemented into there. We got a little bit into whether or not a lessor is responsible for signs versus the property owner, and, you know, we can say they're all responsible. I will point out we had some discussion about...
It should be on. Is it?
The power's dead in the room.
Okay. Are they just
going to turn on? I thought that was just a couple of those. While we're waiting for this to warm up, I have one comment about the language you use in this ordinance. Is the guy out in the field, the guy who has a high school education, is he going to understand the thing? If he's starting up a new business and he's going to put up a sign, will he know what the ordinance is telling him?
No, we're going to count on him to come to us and ask what he can do.
Well,
I'm going to hope to make a much simpler, you know, guideline.
I think so. You need to get the lawyers away from it.
Right.
Okay? The lawyer wrote it.
The problem is that, remember, this is the result of a challenge to the U.S. Supreme Court. So if it's not vetted by an attorney, then it's going to end up back in court. But as I was saying, we got into a little bit of discussion about obsolete signs. So Clem McKeska's goes out of business.
Yeah.
What do we do? We had talked about that. It turns out that's actually in the code. It's in a much later section. Right now it's set at a year. I think we had talked about 90 days. So when we get to that, we'll change it. But that was in the code. I know you brought it up, Adam. And, but yes, it was in there. It was just way towards the back. We talked about sign permits not required for certain types of signs. You know, obviously government signs. I think we put address signs in here. If it's been damaged in an emergency, you can just fix the sign and then get a permit afterwards. That kind of thing. We talked about architectural harmony, and I believe that Commissioner Carey gave us some decent language for that, so I substituted that in on my copy back at my desk.
Joseph, on the permit deal there, so these people, they can't walk in here and get a permit. They have to leave a line, right?
But we do both.
Okay. Well, they are allowed to?
Yeah, we allow people to come in and do a permit. We have a permit technician that will do the information entered in for them if they don't have the ability to do so online. So we talked about electronic signs. We are still looking to try to figure out what the optimal animation language might be, because I think that we felt that having no animation was a little too draconian, but having a full-blown Kia commercial with dancing hamsters is too excessive. So there's got to be a balance between that. We have to figure out how to articulate that so that it's not subjective.
Do we know what the other cities have on that? Killeen, Georgetown?
Well, Killeen will let a full-blown commercial. That's where I literally was driving down 190, and the dancing hamster commercial full length was going on the billboard. So we obviously want to eliminate that. We don't allow that at all. We don't allow any animations, but they happen. And since it's a changing sign, it's hard for us to catch it all the time. And frankly, if it's not distracting, we just kind of are ignoring it right now, because we know that we're working on the code.
Excuse me, Joel. That's a challenge of being in a digital world, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Many digital signs, and the signs are changing and all that business. And before long, you're driving and walking, reading signs.
But part of that
A number of years ago, there was a big incident up at BMW. They had a sign, people driving into the airport, they listed the airlines and the schedules and the times, and the fellow was trying to read all of the changing things and crashed, sued, and won, and they took down that thing because the moving and the words and everything were distracting.
Right. Right, so that's definitely something that we're trying to avoid. And good sign companies know that. So the actual sign manufacturers are real good about explaining that. They've actually gotten very proactive about dealing with cities and coming up with standards. I mean, obviously they're trying to sell signs, and obviously they like signs, but they understand that if there's too many signs, then that's a bad thing. You know, it's the analogy I use is walking into a city and seeing too many signs is like going into a room where everybody's yelling at you. You don't hear anything and you want to leave. So that's what happens when there's too many signs. And especially if they're all animated, that just exacerbates the problem. So we're working on
it. 1.2, I learned a hard lesson. We had a book put out during Lent. We had devotions and put it in the booklet. I know how to spell prop, okay? P-R-O-P-H-E-T. Okay, and spell check changed it to P-R-O-F-I-T in my devotion. Okay, I was talking about Jeremiah the prophet, and it said P-R-O-F-I-T. I didn't spell it that way. Spell check
is a beginning.
The thing about that, the contrast to this, is that, and I talked to the newspaper, because the spell check will pick up a word, but you still have to edit it.
That's right.
Because if it passes spell check, that's okay for the computer version.
You got to proofread it.
Right.
Spell check.
Yeah.
And that's, again, that's part of the danger of digital signage. I will say the advantage to digital signage is, and one of the things we're working on, Jerry Bark is our public relations director. One of the initiatives he's working on is working with the owners of electronic signs so that we can put city information on those as needed. So there are already federal requirements that obviously if there's an emergency, those signs can be taken over by the FCC. But you know, doing something cooperative with the city would also be beneficial. So being able to cycle in, you know, city activities and whatnot. So that's one of the things we're working on. So, you know, the political reality is I'm trying to play ball. So we want to allow some animation because they want it. And so we allow a little bit of animation, but then we get to put
our own animation,
Easter egg hunt at, you know, Carl Levin Park or whatever, community park, then I think that's a win-win for everybody. So that's one of the things we're doing. I think where we left off was getting into the actual specific regulations per district. And so this is where it gets really long and drawn out with lots of comments. So in general, it's broken up into residential and commercial districts, and then each district is broken up into general sign requirements and then individual lot requirements. Because in both scenarios, you get development. So you get a neighborhood, which is allowed to have signs, and then you get individual lots for a home that are allowed to have signs. Same with a business, you've got a shopping center that's allowed to have its signs, and then each individual business is allowed to have its signs. So they mirror each other, and that's kind of where we'll pick up. So the general regulation is, you know, we don't want any sign being generally larger than 4 square feet in area on a property. And then the residential developments, we start getting into the specifics about how far away they need to be from the right-of-way. In other words, we don't want signs just right up along the road. That 30 feet is designed, I think, for deeper lots, and we may have to look at that. We may have to reduce that to probably 15 to 20 feet. Realistically, though, they're not going to get any closer than 15 feet because we have so many utility easements along our streets that you wouldn't be able to put signs in there anyway. But I think 30 feet's excessive, but I don't necessarily think that it should go any lower than maybe 15. Does that seem reasonable to everybody?
I think 15 is good.
All right, then I think we're going to change that to...
What was your comment again, Joseph, about the utility
easements? Oh, we have so many easements along the roads that you wouldn't be able to put a sign within 10 or 15 feet of a street anyway. Because you have all those utility units where, you know, power, electric, water, sewer.
So I thought temporary signs with the 15 feet back to the edge of the road like campaign signs?
Yeah, that's a different animal.
Okay.
That's different. These are permanent, like permanent neighborhood signs. And then we start getting into flavors of neighbors. And I think we did cover this last time where we had large developments, medium developments, and smaller developments. And if I recall correctly, I thought we decided we didn't care how big it was. Does that sound familiar to everybody?
We didn't discuss it, but you and I discussed it.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, well, let's start with that. So we're looking at three flavors of subdivisions based on the size. One is a small residence, you know, 4 acres or less. Then you get to some over 4 acres and then some over 40 acres. And they're allowed larger and larger signs successively. Is that something that seems pretty reasonable or unreasonable? Or?
I mean, I think if you have more land, you might need bigger
signs. As those acreages get cut up, is the signage and size reduced?
Theoretically, they wouldn't be cut up. So in other words, let's look at Cedarbrook Ridge. That is a neighborhood that's over 40 acres. And it's going to get cut up into smaller lots, but it's still a development of 40-acre size. So that's what we're talking about. So we're saying that Cedarbrook Ridge should be allowed to have much larger signage because it's a large subdivision that theoretically has a common theme, a common thread. The streets are named similarly. Whereas Gomer Lane is a much smaller neighborhood. You know, if they wanted to put a neighborhood sign for that development on Gomer way down Stillhouse Lake Road, it would have smaller sign requirements because it's a smaller development. And so that was the question, is do we care? And
I think it'd be better to have more uniformity regardless of the size of the development. I think it would look better in the city to be uniform throughout.
Okay.
On the maximum, no matter what the development is.
Well, then maybe as a compromise, what we say is that sign sizes stay the same, but larger developments can obviously have more signs because they have more entrances. So does that sound like something that we could... And maybe that's what we just do, is we change it. Instead of breaking it up into sizes, we just say the number of signs you have is based on the number of entrances in your subdivision.
So what would be your max size? Would it be the 10 by 10?
Maybe we meet in the middle. Yeah, what was that, 8x8?
So right now there's a requirement in every neighborhood?
No, I don't think so. There's currently not a requirement on that, right?
No. No, and you don't have to have signs. It's just...
No, but I'm saying like in the Cedarbrook, you have, I mean, it doesn't comply with what we just said, right? It's bigger than that.
Yes, but Cedarbrook Ridge is in the overlay district where large developments are actually encouraged to have monuments. So that's why they have that tower. The idea is you want some kind of cool feature to draw attention to the subdivision.
So would this keep that from happening?
It might. And that could become an issue as you stretch. I mean, realistically, how many more large neighborhoods are we going to have? But we do have the potential to have some go down 2410. We know that Bruce White has just bought 110 acres on the south side of 2410. The only reason he's haven't started anything yet is because it's a narrow strip of land. It's almost like an L shape. So he's only got one entrance. And, you know, per the fire code, you can't have one entrance for more than 30 units. So he's got to wait and try to acquire more land so he can get another entrance in there. Point being that, yes, we're going to see, you know, 100 plus acre development on 2410. And, you know, this might hinder that ability. But remember, that's for a sign. Now, if they want to build a windmill or a lighthouse or something cool, that's not necessarily a sign. What this would regulate would be the size of the sign on the windmill or lighthouse. So I don't think it necessarily conflicts with that.
Well, what
the windmill would be underneath our ordinance as far as a windmill goes. The height of that.
A windmill.
Yeah, a windmill.
Right.
An actual windmill would be underneath our ordinance.
If they, correct.
Yeah, so they wouldn't be able to, that would have to be a special signage for the windmill.
But to clarify, what is signage? Is a stone wall with letters on it considered a sign?
It could be, yes. It kind of depends. What we've been doing traditionally, like for instance, in the situation of, let's say they put up a fake water tower or something, we might treat it as a wall sign and then use the 50% calculation on the side of the water tower. So it gives us some flexibility. You know, obviously, common sense would say the whole water tower is not the sign. So we would have to look at that, but we would have to be realistic about. And there's some language in the code later that talks about that. The area of a sign that doesn't have a clear and distinct framing would be to put an imaginary box around the letters and calculate it that way. So we still have the tools to do that.
So basically the verbiage part is not being worried by...
Correct. And yes, that does get into some, that will get into some scenarios as well where somebody decides to, you know, take a semi-trailer and park it out there and then put an 8x8 sign on that and call that their sign. So we'll keep looking at that one because that is an issue. What I'm hoping is more than likely Mr. Whitus in that specific situation would try to get a plan development anyway because he's not going to want to do the maximum of the size yards that we're going to require and so forth. And at that point, we can negotiate specific about size. That's exactly what we did with Cedarbrook Bridge. We basically gave him an envelope and said, you can put some kind of unique feature there that can't be taller than this and wider than this. I don't care what you put in there. And those were the specifics. We gave an envelope, and that's what they did.
Where roughly good. Is that 110 acres? How far is it? East is it? Just roughly.
This is the only duplex.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. The people that were meeting the other day complained about the guy who wanted to put in the big metal building.
So they're to the west of that?
They're to the west of that road. I've worked on that road. That road is like terrible.
So yeah, it's this over here.
Good for them. They're good people.
Well, like I said, it's a narrow strip. It kind of comes this way and runs this way.
We discussed that was where the Nova was, but that because of the terrain, it's going to be a real problem to combine with what we wanted the lots to be, because I don't care about when we're talking about siding the whole thing and the toilet, instead of we're talking about the terrain, you know, it's just going to be difficult.
Well, the one difference between then and now is that we now have that sewer line, and it has a stub to that area. So that was one of the underlying principles, was that we were assuming septic, which limited density and so forth. Well, now they have the potential to sewer that subdivision, which gives them a lot more density. So that's something we're really going to have to look at. You know, we don't have any hill protection ordinances right now, and I'm getting on track. We all know what happened to the big hill on Cedar Grove Bridge. So that is a legitimate concern that we'll bring back at a later date. So getting back to signs, subdivision entrance signs, obviously we need to do some tooling of that. I think I'd rather than sit there and list like multiple scenarios, I think I'd just like to have one scenario where we base it on the number of entrances, and maybe we'll even base the size on the number of entrances, but that way it's just a simple calculation.
Even if you base it on the entrances, most developers are not. They're going to have one sign up with one main entrance.
Right. Right. So I think we'll be okay. All right, and then we've got, construction signs for a subdivision being allowed to be 64 square feet in area or 10 feet in height. So that's basically the coming soon Cedarbrook Ridge signs. Those are allowed to be temporary signs and can be placed at each entrance. I think that's fairly standard language, and we see that, you know, we want advertisements for our subdivisions. And they can even do a monument sign. I don't know why they would do that, but they could. It must be removed within 10 days after development has ceased. So that's kind of a tricky one because there's still vacant lots in Skipshaw. So technically they could have a sign up there, but we really don't have a remedy for that. I don't know if it's fair to say if 90% of the subdivision is developed, they have to take the signs down.
I don't think it really matters as long as I maintain the sign, but if it's going to sit there for 5-10 years and it's falling apart.
Right, and that's a different section of the code that, that's absolutely correct. So, and I agree. I think as long as the sign is maintained, that's really our concern. All right, so now we get to signs. Oh, sorry.
Hold on, you're going to talk about the signs in individual lots.
All right, so now we're getting to individual homes. So, you know, whether or not it's a new subdivision, if it's an existing subdivision.
And I know we had talked after the meeting, the last meeting we went over this, so I was talking about flagpoles.
Yeah,
and some of the people already have 3 flagpoles instead of what probably grandfathered.
They may be grandfathered.
But if you do have a new subdivision and they wanted to put 3 flagpoles in the front as part of their public sign, why couldn't they?
Because most single-family residences don't have a lot large enough to support that much stuff in the front yard.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the individual lot though, I was talking about the entrance subdivision.
Oh, I don't even know if we covered that. That's not even...
I don't think we did.
I think that goes under commercial scenarios, and I think they're allowed to do whatever they want.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying if they have 3 or 2, they would be grandfathered, but in the future it'll be one.
For a single residence,
okay.
But what I will do, because it is not clear, is I will add a flag provision.
You're flagging?
I will flag it for flags. What do you think, 3 flags is reasonable? Because I don't want 20 flags out there.
7's a lucky number.
Three is good. Individual lots, so this is your individual home now.
Okay.
We allow 1 flagpole not to exceed 25 feet in height, a flag not to be larger than 15 square feet in area. So, this is going to kill Jerome Miller, who's got like 8 flags. I don't want to call him out.
He's grandfather, is he?
Yes, he would be grandfather. Now, here's where we get into the meat of what I want to talk about. Okay, so other signs on your property, including pole signs, wall signs, monument signs, shall be allowed at any time on any property without a permit. So basically, you can put signs in your lot. And these include 1 permanent sign with a sign face no larger than 2 square feet on the property at any time. So a permanent sign is like a real sign, a pole, maybe a monument sign. The only scenario I've really seen with that are people that want really fancy address markers on their home. But I can't call it an address marker because you're reading the sign and know what it is. I put that in text. Usually there's people that want fancy address signs. But if you want a permanent sign in your yard, that's allowed. This is the one we got to talk about. I have 4 temporary signs with a combined sign face of 32 square feet on a property at any time. My nightmare, originally it was written as temporary signs not to exceed 32 square feet. My nightmare is somebody placing 32 1-foot signs on their property. But the other side of that coin is, during an election, you've got federal candidates, state candidates, county candidates, school board candidates, local candidates, so we've already exceeded 4 signs. And I don't know if it's fair to make people pick their 4 top candidates. So, that's what I want you to weigh. 32 1-square-foot signs versus putting a limit on it.
The other thing, too, is on the definition of what a banner and a pennant is. Do they come under a sign?
Yes.
Yeah. And so that would limit the number of A&M pennants out there on an A&M day.
Right.
Which is okay with me.
Giggle.
So if I had to pick, I'd go ahead and take a chance on 32 foot signs. Basically, just say it's 32 square foot of signs. We don't necessarily care how many there are.
Yeah, these of course have to be in good. They have to be good looking at all times, not some trashy looking crap out there. Right? I mean, well maintained. That's fancy. Yeah, well maintained.
Yeah. 4 by 4 seconds.
So basically. Right. So basically, the language is going to change from the property owner to make place temporary signs.
Not to exceed 32 square.
Correct. Or a little strike through guy. With a combined sign. So that way, you make your choices that way. Now, the cool thing about this is before we used to quantify that, you know, there were real estate signs, there were construction signs, and so forth. Now, we don't care. You can just put whatever sign you want in your yard. It could even be a commercial sign. It could be, you know, support somebody's lawn care business. Because it doesn't say non-commercial or commercial. It doesn't say non-commercial sign. Because again, you have to read it to know it's commercial, although we think that the state law will give us a
treat. You're tricking me right now, because I've already got signs in people's yards. There we go.
Okay. But that's what that's designed for. When you're getting your roof done, the roofer obviously wants his sign out on your property. This allows that to happen.
So this is going to allow somebody to basically have four by four signs in their yard?
Yes.
Four by four.
Yeah? Well, that's what, 32 feet?
Yes. Right. That's now, I think there's a maximum, and yes, it's 4x4. That's exactly right. That's the maximum you can do.
So a person today could have four of those in their yard?
Well, after this ordinance.
It's 32 square feet.
Yeah,
32.
16. Sorry, it's two.
Two.
Two 4x4 signs.
No,
you're
right.
Okay.
Yeah, 4x4 or one.
No, 4x4 would be eight.
So 16 square feet.
Okay, 16, okay.
But yes, you could have two pretty big, or you could have a, you know, a 32 square foot sign.
Right, I was making sure it wasn't four.
You can't block the traffic and things like that.
A whole lot.
Right.
Okay.
And again,
I'm glad my math was on.
I was going to say,
so we should have a temporary sign.
No.
I don't know.
Then they're not temporary.
Well, they're temporary. Temporary is defined as their construction material. So in other words, it's not in a foundation in the ground. You know, this is going to be your little real estate, little pop-in signs or banner or something.
So the easiest thing to do is when they start looking terrible, just go to the board.
Yes. You got to yank it. Replace it with something.
Wait, until it's not.
And that's basically the theme of this whole ordinance, is that I got two code worth of guys. And over 10,000 structures in the city, and a budget that gets getting smaller and smaller for political reasons. And so I can't do that. I can't be the sign police like I want to, or like the citizens want to. All we can do is triage this. Yet at the same time, we got a Supreme Court that's lessening the restrictions on sign requirements. Yet I've got citizenry that don't want a bunch of signs. And then I have to deal with the fact that when political season happens, how do I address that? You know, there's, thankfully, there is the uniform elections law where I could say that within these certain time periods is when you can have this unlimited number of signs. The problem is what happens if you have a run-on and that kind of thing. So I think the easiest solution is just to let everybody have 32 square feet of signs, period. I don't care what they are. They could be your kid is an honor student, your kid's in the band, you're re-roofing your house, you're selling your house.
Stay off my grass.
You stay off my grass and vote for a candidate.
Said you can't address content, but this was not prevent some of the sign wars that have gone in the city. Neighbors off at each other.
That's absolutely correct. It would not prevent that. We really can't prevent that now, per se. We have a couple of those going on. All we can do is hope that people will be civil, and then, of course, you can file slander, libel, and civil lawsuits against those people. And then there are decency laws, which are completely different animal altogether. So obviously, if I, you know, did a F the police sign in my front yard, there could be some legitimate reasons to require that sign taken down. But that's different than what we're talking about here. But I feel like this is the best compromise, is just let people put the signs they want as long as they take care of them, as long as they're not causing an issue with public safety. Just move on from there. And remember that this is city code. Deed restrictions and HOA restrictions are allowed to be stricter. So, you know, in a new subdivision, people, the creators can decide to curtail all of that. And that's a civil contract that we don't enforce. So there is, you know, the potential for that happening. We'll just see. And then some general regulations. Hold on, I'm sorry, we're just not going through that. Okay, you're also allowed a 8.5 by 11 inch sign in your window at any one time, in addition to the 32 square feet. That's typically to allow your home security signs and that kind of thing. So those don't count. If you have a home occupation, you're still allowed an additional home occupation sign, which is already allowed in the code. It has to be a essentially a wall sign or attached to a porch or whatever, and it's got its own requirements. So we're allowing those on top of the 32 square feet, because those are permanent signs. Okay, general regulations for signs on individual lots. Obviously, you can't put a sign on somebody's property without their permission. That's the big thing. We don't allow illuminated, electronic, digital, or moving elements in a sign. I think this is going to help out a lot. One of those sign wars, the people lit up the sign, and that was something that we were able to use on them, was that they can't light the sign. Okay, and then obviously you can't place the signs in the street or right-of-way or within any form of public easement. That's one of the limits and locations for signs as well. And then there's a maximum height restriction of 4 feet. And you can't go above your roof line. And then here I do call out address signs. Residents are required to, and that's based on the fire code. Brad, did we determine, is it 4 inches the minimum, or do they change that?
For residential furnishings.
Okay. And then I have it no larger than 8 inches. I don't know if that really matters, per se.
Just the visually impaired?
Yeah, I don't know if we, you know, I have not seen a rampant problem with people putting, like, address numbers too big on their house. Frankly, it's the other problem, that they don't do it, or it's not in a contrasting manner, so you can't read it, and I literally drive down streets going, you know, you're in trouble, because we can't figure out what address they are.
The forge for the house that sits further back off the road, you allow some size increase.
Right. So should we put a maximum at all?
I don't think so.
Well, I still fall under what we just talked about previously.
No, this is in addition to the other sign area. You're allowed that.
Talking about the numbers.
Right. And I guess we'll leave it at 8 and we'll see what happens with that. All right, and then we get into multifamily, which is, again, just like looking at a residential neighborhood. I think that we could probably do the same thing instead of looking at the size, looking at some other factor. Although, really, I don't know if that applies.
You're 24 square feet here now.
Or 36, it's not really that big of a difference. Basically, we're just saying there's little apartment complexes and big apartment complexes, and they should have, you know, signs according to that size. Then we allow an additional sign, and I call it an additional sign, but it's usually for, like, your main office sign. Whatever is required in an apartment complex type situation. Apartment complexes are allowed to place signs without a permit as well. A lot of those are your temporary signs. Again, that's designed to address the political signs and so forth. So again, I guess it's our recommendation that we don't limit the number of signs. It's just based on square footage again, so that it's parallel with the residential.
That'll work.
No, I'm sorry. That we're getting to that. This sign is 32 square feet, and that's for your large real estate construction signs. You know, coming soon, still have some glass kind of things. So I apologize. That one is written correctly. Here it is. Up to 4 additional temporary non-commercial signs. That's the one where we just want to say temporary non-commercial sign not exceeding a combined area of 32 square feet. And that does say non-commercial because it does distinguish, because, you know, an apartment complex is treated as a commercial entity with a residential use. So there's a difference between their commercial signage and then a, you know, non-commercial sign like political sign and so forth. Okay. And then individual owners, basically, Yeah, that's what I did, is I used to have the same language as the single-family residence, and I said, it's why don't we just say it's the same requirement as a single-family residence. So the individual owner of multifamily housing can have the same number assigned, or the same rules apply to them, it's just something that was a lie. You know, I don't think you're going to get 32 square feet assigned area on the balcony of your apartment, but more power to you if you can. A manufactured home follows the exact same format where there's, again, two flavors of a manufactured home park. But again, you get your monument sign of 36 square feet, your additional sign, which is your office sign. It's the four additional signs, again, that we're going to get rid of. And then the individual owners of that have the same rights as anybody in residential. So, and now it makes a lot more sense, because typically manufactured home parks are divided into lots. And therefore, we're saying that on your lot, you can do 32 square feet of signs on your lot. Seems pretty fair.
Yep.
And the non-residential uses in a residential district basically are your churches, government buildings, industrial buildings that are allowed in R1, municipal centers and several kinds of industrial buildings, municipal buildings or colleges. Basically, they have to follow commercial sign regulations. Yes, sir.
When you were talking about the lots, signage, did you say the signage for like a mobile home park is the same as a single family house?
Yes, for each individual lot.
But the lots are significantly smaller and different setbacks and easements.
That is correct. But it seems kind of, again, unfair to start limiting the number of signs they can have.
But if they don't have the room for it.
I mean, yeah, if they physically don't have the room for it, they're not going to put it.
I don't know. I don't know how many signs I see now, a whole lot, but I think the way you say it, it seems like that might be too much.
Yeah, I would just not want to limit their signage. In other words, the whole lawsuit on the Supreme Court case of Gilbert versus Reed versus Gilbert had to do with looking at different types of signs and assigning different rules to those types of signs. If you recall, you know, they had a rule for temporary signs that were political in nature. They had a different set of rules for how long you could do signs and so forth for directional signs, and that included like church services here. So the point being that when they started distinguishing non-commercial speech and saying one had different standards than the other, that's when they got sued, and that's when they lost. So this would be the exact same thing. We'd be saying that if you live in a manufactured home, you don't have as much right to post as many signs as somebody living in a single-family home. And that's not the message.
It'd be the opposite side, like where Larry has more land, and all of people that want his support will put gigantic signs because of his location and size, you know, but you're going to be limited on that too. You know what I'm saying? Even though you have the land, you still can only, you're right.
Right, so there is that argument, but again, it's fair because it's the same thing across the city, but you're absolutely right. You know, somebody that owns 20 acres still can only put 32 square feet of signage.
Right. Good. Good try.
I'll be behind you there for a minute.
So now we're getting into commercial, and commercial, for the most part, is going to parallel the residential, where we're going to probably strike the whole four signs, 32 square feet, and do 32 square feet of signage. The first type of commercial are freestanding signs, and those are your big giant signs for your developments. They're currently allowed to be 300 square feet and 35 feet in height. So that's basically your Freddy sign or whatever. But obviously in the overlay district that reduces to 10 feet in height, but for the rest of the city, it is 35 feet in height. You're allowed, and it's based on the number of signs you get, and the total area is based on your frontage. You know, so if you've got a larger street frontage, you get more signs. So this language right here is lifted straight from our existing code. This is how we calculate sign requirements. And so I don't anticipate changing that. I think that's going to start a fight that's not going to be worth winning. And again, realistically, as much as we're running out of developable room, it's not going to be an issue. There aren't too many large commercial lots left where you're going to see multiple signs. And in fact, Sam's going to put like two more signs, I think three more signs, because they're on a corner than what they did. So they just felt like, we don't need that many signs.
They're not needed. Too many is too many.
But legally, they could have. They could have just do turn the corner and put another one.
Right.
So it's not necessarily, I don't see it as a big issue. But at the same time, I don't think we should change it just because, we might get some pushback from that.
What do you think about the height, though?
35 feet?
Do you think that's excessive in some areas of town?
Yes.
I mean, if you're on the highway, that's understandable. But if you're, in the old part of town, you know what I'm saying?
The height is technically based on density and on the speed limit. So 35 feet is what the sign companies feel is if you're moving about 45, 50 miles an hour, that's going to give you a chance to see it in time to stop and turn and impulse, buy that Ferrari that you were just going to impulse buy. I mean, I don't really
believe it. But what about commercial lots that we have there, like in 30 mile per hour zones?
Like those just 190s.
Yeah, I mean, just
right.
In some of the smaller commercial lots that we have, don't you, where it's mixed in with residential, where you have one street of commercial and everything else around it's residential, it seems like 35 foot would be a little excessive for that location.
Plus your traffic going through the replacement of the traffic to the actual sign itself, the height of it, I mean, for a distance is good, but when you get up next to it, where's the sign at? It's just 35 feet up.
Okay, then,
but don't we have, like over here on the 9th Way, we have an ordinance there, the overlay, that restricts the height of the sign there, right?
Yes, it's to 10 feet.
To what? I'm sorry,
10 feet.
To 10 feet. So,
but the speed limit over there, what?
It's 45.
Yeah.
But that was under the anticipation that eventually it would drop to 30 as density increased.
It's going to take forever.
It's going 60.
And one of the previous things you talked about, the roof line, no higher than.
Yeah.
That's for house signs.
Correct.
Right. Still.
Reservation.
Right. We'll probably never win that argument with commercial. I'm all for reducing sign heights. Believe you me, I wouldn't have a problem with that. What I can do is maybe what we can do is look at it. I don't have a good map here, but we do have a thoroughfare network for our city where we've defined arterials and collectors and minor arterials. Maybe we can make a scaled sign height based on that, so that because the speed limits are definitely going to be reduced as you go down the chain. So collectors, maybe the sign height's 20 feet, and then minor arterials, maybe we go up to 30 or 25, and then 35 on your arterials. The issue that we have is you also are allowed a 42 and a half foot sign if you're within 660 feet of 190 or I-14, and that's because people are doing 70, 80 miles an hour down the road.
I mean, the only person that I see that might have an issue as you get into slower zones is like gas stations that need the name plus diesel's this, regular's this, like they're trying to get all that on there. Those would be the only people that I think might be impacted by the height.
Well, that's true, and then I can just show them the gas station right down there by the CVS that's got a 10-foot sign.
Okay.
Also, there's no restriction on putting the gas prices on your awning on your gas station, which can be higher than 10 feet. I tell you what, I'll look at doing some kind of stratified sign height. I'll go back and look at the literature about what the height should be ideally for doing 30, for doing 45.
That issue ties over the overlay on the Business 190 veterans will do that, where we want signage like this.
Well, and that could be a different animal altogether. Yeah. We could decide on Business 190 to just reduce the height to 10 feet if we want to.
I mean, if we're limiting 24-10 to 10 foot, I don't know why we wouldn't limit everything to 10 foot in the city unless you're on I-14.
Because I want to keep my job. But realistically, I understand, and I agree. I personally agree with you. The problem is, you should have seen the feedback I got when I tried to limit to 10 feet on veterans.
We can go through those meetings.
So,
back you up.
Well, then we'll look at that. We'll look at a stratification based on, I think the fair thing would be based on our thoroughfare network. because the idea is that's controlling the speed of the traffic, the density of the traffic. And again, on a collector street, you're dealing with fewer cars, a slower speed limit, and that means that you don't need as big a sign because there's not as many cars blocking your view across the street, and you're driving slower, so you have time to see the sign and react. So that's reasonable.
We want to keep you employed.
I'm just saying that if what we did for 2410 was our idea of beautification for the city and trying to keep everything with a nice flow, why we wouldn't, you know, want to use that process?
Well, I agree. And the argument again is also that 2410 is your view shed into the hills, and so you don't want to disrupt that view shed. But the same argument would hold for going down Stillhouse Lake Road.
Right.
And we tried to actually extend it down that, and it failed. What was that, 6-7 years ago? We tried extending the Nice Way Overlay District all the way down to Fuller Lane, along those roads, and we felt that that was just as much a growth corridor and just as much a beautification corridor, but it didn't pass. Doesn't mean we couldn't try it again, but I think this might be a way to deal with that. Okay, high-rise signs, there's no way we're going to get around this because that's tied into billboards, and that's a state law that says 42 and a half feet, so that's how big we're allowed to be. I think we're allowed to be, I forget what the square footage is, but it might be the same, it might be 300 feet, yeah. But you're only allowed one high-rise freestanding sign on your property no matter how much frontage you have. And then our old sign code had like different sections for all types of signs, walls, canopy, marquee, projecting, roof, and then it all said the same thing over and over again, so I just merged them together and said walls, canopies, marquees, roof, projecting signs all have to be about 50% of the wall area. So that's the big question, is 50% too much? I think the overlay district reduces it to 30, but I think the rest of the city currently is at 50%.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's 25%. It seems sufficient for like 50%.
I think the problem is that also includes the area of your windows, and so some people.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm thinking is if you take a building, half of it in the center is taken up by doors and windows, so that means the other portion is going to can be covered inside.
Okay.
Is wrap windows considered signage?
Yes. Yeah, if you put something in your window, that's a sign.
So businesses could wrap all their windows?
They can, but only at this point, only up to 50% of the surface area of the whole wall. So that's the issue, is 50% too much?
Well, I mean, if you put it that way, it might not be. I'm thinking more of like stuff physically attached to the walls.
Right.
Stuff attached to the
windows. You know, because
not even necessarily attached to the windows. If you put your open sign in the window, that sign, that square footage applies towards your sign requirements. So those are the other things you have to think about. Well, let's table that one. Why don't you guys give that some thought? We'll come back to it. I'm thinking probably mid to late summer, we'll probably have a town hall forum on this where we'll advertise and go to the activity center, and then I'll let the business owners yell at me at that point. But we'll go from there. We're going to do that for the parking lot. I'll get to that later. Parking on grass and heavy vehicles, we are doing one of those as well. As we get closer, I'll let you know the dates. Okay. All right, detached signs are additional freestanding signs that are erected on properties. Usually that's done to address directional signs, your drive-through menus and so forth, so we allow a certain amount of that. Again, not to exceed 32 square feet or 6 feet in height. I need to go out and look at drive-through menus and see if they're actually taller than 6 feet. Some of them might be, so we may need to adjust that to 8. I don't really think that's a problem, but that's something that we just pragmatically need to look at. It's just 6 feet's just kind of been our general rule of thumb.
I'm pretty sure that the majority of them are 6 feet.
That, that 6 foot's good enough?
No, I'm saying they're over
6 feet?
They're over.
Yeah, okay. Well, then why don't we just go ahead and change it to 8 foot? What, 8 feet?
I want to verify that.
Okay, well, I'm going to put 10 for now. And then go from there. Verify. So there goes a bunch of drives.
I mean, my truck sits about 7 foot off the ground, so when I pull up and it's over my truck, I mean, I know that it's over 6 foot tall. So.
Right.
I'd say most of them are probably 8 to 9 feet.
Okay. Yeah, we'll field verify that. All right, next is off-premise signs. We kind of covered this before. This was recently added to our existing sign code where we allow off-premise signs. Before there were two flavors of that. One's on I-14 and one's on VMB, and essentially these are billboards. And again, those are kind of protected by state and federal laws, so we're probably not going to change very much of that. You know, we don't allow them closer than 1,000 feet apart on B&B. I don't think we have a density requirement on 190. But the new flavor of off-premise sign that we had was the one where people are allowed to off-premise advertise on vacant lots throughout the city in general. This is something that was added to our code of ordinances last year. But we did say that it had to be property that had abutted an arterial, minor arterial, or collector. So again, those major streets, you can't do it on a residential street. You're only allowed one per frontage. It's valid for 6 months and should be eligible for renewals as long as it remains in compliance with conditions of this code. Basically, as long as they keep it in good shape, they can keep it. Can't exceed 32 square feet in height or area and 6 feet in height. And it can't be illuminated at all. So I think the only real example we have that now is that Heritage Oak sign. There's two of them along South Lake Road. One kind of behind the Walmart neighborhood center and then one at the corner of Chaparral and South Lake Road. And frankly, that's why that ordinance was made, so that property owner put those signs on.
So this is with permission of the property owner?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think we've probably reached a good stopping point because we're about to get into signs allowed without a permit. I think I've got a lot of highlighting on that one. Any questions or other discussion about that?
Okay. Well, some of the people that are there on, say, 2410, that are, you know, about the signs, just in front of the signs, they've got that, you know, management, you put that edge in the rest of the picture, and so on. We're growing, you can't even tell what the trees are.
What was that? I'm sorry, you said
the landscape around some of the signs, blocking the signs, what? Didn't you get their butt out there and do it, or call up a company?
Yeah, and that's a code enforcement issue. We can deal with.
Yeah,
you know, Larry can just drop his card off and all those businesses.
For their both.
So you have to recuse yourself now when we get to that part of adopting that code. Alright, well, thank you so much for your continued assistance on this. We'll keep going on the next workshop and
good workshop.
We'll get all the way to Queens. I know this is not exciting, but and make some progress with that.
May I ask one quick question?
Yes, ma'am. Of course.
Feather signs, are they allowed in Harper Heights?
Yes.
Now? Okay.
There, we haven't gotten to those yet, but those would be the ones allowed without a permit. That's why it's going to be controversial. They are supposed to be temporary, but again, it's going to be one of those where as long as they're well maintained and below a certain height, that we'll be okay with it. And there will be a limit to the number of them.
But are they allowed now?
Yes.
Okay.
With a permit.
With a permit, gotcha. Okay.
And so future workshops, we'll talk more about that parking on the grass and heavy vehicle parking. We've already kind of written an ordinance for it, but we're going to take it to a public forum on June 25th, I believe. And so when I get more information, I'll let you know about that. The other thing we're looking at is we're looking at amending our code to allow what you call microbreweries and wineries.
A little bit, it'll be small ones?
Right. So we're looking into that now. We've been asked to research that. We've got some potential developments coming in here, and frankly, we're missing the boat on this. And other cities are profiting from it. So we're looking at how to remedy that, yet maintain our TOAA requirements. So you'll probably be workshopping that soon. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Awkward place.